Will and Clayton followed the creek to a clearing and the house, barn, and outbuildings that comprised the Hill Ranch. A pleasant log house with a wide front porch, it stood on one side of the clearing, opposite the barn at the other edge. There was a gradual rise in the land behind the house, and Will got a glimpse of a cornfield directly behind the barn. When they came out into the clearing, they were spotted by a small boy near the barn, and he ran to meet them.
Who's that, Papa?
Mind your manners, son. That ain't very polite to meet a stranger like that. Where's your brother?
Oh, in the bean patch.
The boy still stared at Will.
Run and get him. Tell him I said come here.
The boy turned and ran out behind the barn.
Well, that's my youngest, Stanley. He was named after his grandpa on my wife's side. We call him Stan. He's 12. His brother's 14. His name's Clayton Jr. We just call him Clay.
They continued on to the barn and stepped down from the saddle.
I'll take you to the house to meet my wife.
He wasn't sure what Will wanted to do, so he hesitated to suggest anything. His two sons arrived at the barn in the next moment, so he introduced Will.
This here is Deputy Marshal Will Tanner. He's going to be scouting around the place tonight, mostly down by the cattle. Take a good look at him so you don't go taking a shot at him. Will, this is my eldest, Clay.
He turned to his son then.
Clay, take the saddle off my horse and put him in the corral.
Yes, sir. You want me to unsaddle his too?
No, thank you, Clay. I'll take Buster down that creek with me tonight in case I need him. I would like to leave my pack horse here, though. I'll get a couple of things out of my packs to fix some supper.
He started to loosen the pack saddle on the sorrel, but Clay interrupted.
I can take care of that for you. I'll leave your packs over yonder in the corner of the barn, and I'll turn the horse out in the corral.
Why, that's mighty neighborly of you. Thank you kindly.
He handed the pack horse's reins to the boy and led Buster as he walked with Clayton toward the kitchen door. By now, Louise Hill had spotted her husband and the stranger coming from the barn, so she stepped outside on the little back porch to greet them.
Clayton?
She looked Will over and waited for an introduction.
This is U.S. Deputy Marshal Will Tanner, hon. We had a drawing at the meeting today, and I won him. I knew we didn't have one, so I brought him home with me. Will, this is my wife, Louise.
Louise brushed a wayward strand of hair from her forehead and smiled at Will.
Well, I suppose we'll have to find a place to put him. How do you do, Mr. Tanner? Or should I say Deputy Tanner?
How about just plain Will? I'm pleased to meet you, ma'am.
Are you really a deputy marshal?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Clayton explained Will's purpose there, and she immediately invited him to supper.
The least we can do is give you something to eat before you spend the night in the woods.
Oh, no, ma'am. Thank you just the same, but I don't want to put you to that trouble. You didn't have any notice, and I'll just camp like I usually do.
Won't be any trouble at all. I'll just roll out some more biscuits and peel a couple more potatoes, and we'll be ready to eat in about an hour. You can just make yourself comfortable on the porch or wherever, and I'll call you when it's ready.
Well, I'll certainly accept your invitation. Thank you, ma'am.
Caleb Hawkins walked over to the fire and poured himself another cup of coffee. He stood there thinking about a time not long ago when his brothers Lemuel and Arlie were still alive. Back then, he didn't have much say about what they did or how they did it, because he was the youngest. But since the Hawkins family had crossed paths with Will Tanner, that had all changed. He had hired three men, but he was now the boss. He'd felt some guilt for running away from the fight that killed Lemuel and Arlie, but he had justified his actions in his mind. They had ridden into an ambush. At least, that was what he had told Fanny. His thoughts were interrupted then, when he caught sight of a horse and rider approaching the river from the Oklahoma side. Spence spoke up in that instant.
Yonder's Rango.
I see him.
The other men didn't bother to get up, but craned their necks around to see. He remained by the fire, watching Ringo's horse come out of the water and approach the camp. Ringo stepped down as he arrived.
Well, what do you think, Ringo?
Any more coffee in that pot, Spence?
Little bit.
What the hell do you think?
Ringo displayed a wide smile for him.
Everything's just right. Ain't nothing going on at that hill place. And the cows are just waiting for us to come get them. I could almost hear them begging, "Come get me, Ringo!" These dad-burned sodbusters don't know nothing about working cattle.
He took the coffee cup Spence handed him.
Are they scattered?
No. Right now they're bunched. So, you could part them with a comb and cut out ever how many you want. Of course, that could change before dark, but I doubt it will. So I reckon that means we're going over the river tonight, right?
I reckon.
His reply brought forth a grunt of satisfaction from Welch, the third man riding with him.
In that case, I think I'll cook me up a little of that bacon we brought. It's gonna be a couple hours before dark, so we got plenty of time for supper.
You got time. I want to wait till hard dark. It's a lot easier to move them then.
Yeah, I might even catch me an hour or two of shut-eye. It's gonna be a long night.
At approximately the same time the outlaws were sitting around the campfire, Louise Hill turned Will's supper plate right side up.
Clayton usually asks the blessing. Since you're our guest, maybe you'd like to ask it.
Darn, I almost reached for a biscuit.
He turned to her.
No, ma'am. The Lord already knows how thankful I am to be able to eat with you folks, and I feel like your husband will use better words than I can.
Clayton laughed in appreciation of his response and immediately recited his usual blessing.
Amen.
Will paused just a moment to make sure he wasn't jumping the gun again, and when everyone started passing the bowls, he reached for a biscuit that had caught his eye before it had been blessed. He held it up over his plate for a few moments while he admired it.
I'll be honest with you, Mrs. Hill. If this biscuit tastes just half as good as it looks, I'm gonna have to say you're the biscuit bacon champion of the whole territory. And I'd appreciate it if you didn't mention that to Bright Dawn Hatfield, because you won the title from her.
Are you married, Will? Because if you are, you'd best not let your wife know you're bragging about everybody else's biscuits.
Yes, ma'am. I'm married. I got married this past Christmas. Her name's Sophie. And I honestly don't know if she can bake biscuits or not. I surely hope she can, because I'm a plum fool about biscuits.
He couldn't help thinking about his marriage. He wasn't sure what kind of cook Sophie was. Margaret did the cooking for the boarding house.
Hell, I ain't even sure I'll still be married when I get back to Fort Smith. Sophie's never pleased when work keeps me away too long.
Did you pick out a good spot to camp tonight?
He was happy to be distracted from those thoughts by Clayton.
Yes, sir, I did. I think it'll be all right.
Now feel free to tell me what you're thinking about the possibility we might get raided. Louise and the boys know what's going on. You think they'll hit us tonight?
To be honest, I think there's a good chance they will.
Clayton's fist tightened around the butter knife he was holding.
Well, by God, we'll be ready for him this time. I got plenty of shells for my shotgun, and Clay has his rifle.
Mr. Hill, I know how you feel, and I respect you for it. But I don't want to take a chance on us shooting at each other in the dark tonight. And I definitely don't want any harm to come to your family. I have a strategy to work against the rustlers that I think will keep you from losing any of your cattle. What I'd like to ask you is to stay here and protect your family in case things do go wrong. Then all I have to worry about is the cattle. Can I count on you to do that?
That seems to me like you're taking on too big a risk. You don't know how many people you'll be up against.
I think I have a pretty good idea. I've handled situations like this before. It's my job, and I don't want to take a chance on you and me shooting at each other.
Listen to him, Clayton. He knows what he's talking about.
Please, listen to your wife. Give me a chance to take care of it. I won't let him take your cattle if you won't let him harm your family.
All right. We'll do it your way.
Louise breathed a sigh of relief.
Now, let's all eat our supper so I can get the kitchen cleaned up before it gets too late tonight.
After supper, Clayton walked Will out to the front porch.
You know, if there are too many and you need help, I'll be right here on the porch. All you gotta do is holler, and I'll come running.
I know that. And it's good to know I've got the backup. If things go like I want, we shouldn't need it. I'll see you in the morning.
Will walked down to the corral to saddle Buster and rode out of the clearing in the fading light of the evening. It was already pretty dark in the trees by the creek as he walked the buckskin slowly. He dismounted and led Buster down to the creek and let him get a good drink before he led him a little way back to a washed-out area in the bank.
Must have been caused by a flood at some point.
For now, it offered some protection for his horse and himself.
Sorry, boy. I'm gonna have to leave your saddle on you. I think we're gonna have to work later tonight, and I won't have time to saddle you.
Buster seemed to understand, so Will took his bedroll from behind his saddle and placed it near the washed-out area of the floor.
Nothing to do now, but wait.
He wasn't sure how long it was before they showed up. It was Buster who first alerted him when the buckskin acknowledged the arrival of horses. Will moved to the edge of the trees and watched the open area they would surely approach through. In a short while, four dark forms of men on horseback emerged from the black of the moonless night.
About what I figured.
He let them continue forward until he could hear them talking in hushed voices. Although he couldn't understand them, he understood that one of them was sending two men to circle the herd. The remaining two men were to act as flank riders and guide the cattle toward the river. When the cattle started slowly moving toward the river, Caleb and Ringo, who were at the head of the herd, remained where they were and watched the cattle move past them. And when the cows continued to head in the right direction, they dropped back to flank positions on each side to keep them moving. Will climbed aboard Buster and drew his Winchester from the saddle sling. Remaining in the cover of the trees, he rode up ahead of the lead cows before coming out ahead of the herd. As the leading cows approached him, he yelled at them. And when that didn't deter them, he dropped Buster's reins and fired two quick rounds in the air. This effectively got their attention and caused them to veer off toward the west, and the rest of the cows blindly followed. Back on the flank of the herd, Ringo heard the shots and shouted across the moving mass of hides and horns.
What the hell? Something's turned them!
He kicked his horse hard and galloped toward the frightened lead cows, which were now turning the whole herd away from the river. He saw a dark figure on a horse, pressing the cows to stampede.
What the hell are you doing, you damn fool? They're going the wrong way!
Will reined his horse around to face the irate man, his rifle ready to fire.
I'm turning them back and arresting you for rustling!
It was too dark for Ringo to identify the man.
The hell you are!
He pulled his pistol. The bay gelding he was riding made for an unsteady shooting platform for a .44 revolver at that distance. So his shot was wide of the mark, while Will planted a round in the middle of Ringo's chest with his rifle. The shots caused the cattle to stampede in earnest and not in the direction the rustlers intended.
Damn it!
With the raid suddenly gone haywire, Caleb Hawkins didn't know what to do.
Those were definitely rifle shots. Someone started that stampede on purpose. But who? And how did they know we planned a raid?
Will spotted Spence, who had been forced to hightail it to keep from being run over by the stampeding herd. Spence was on the same side Ringo had flanked. He spotted Ringo's body on the ground at the same time he saw the man on the horse waiting for him. His reaction was to go for his gun. It was the last reaction he would ever have in this world. Caleb was breathing hard in his panic. There were no riders in sight, so he stepped down from his weary horse. He suspected that he must have avoided the danger.
How am I going to explain this to Fanny? She's going to be furious.
His thoughts were suddenly interrupted by the sound of hoofbeats pounding the grassy meadow. Panic gripped him immediately. He started to climb back in the saddle, but knew he couldn't outrun a horse.
I got no other choice.
He drew his rifle from the saddle sling and cranked a cartridge into the chamber, just as the shadow emerged from the heavy darkness. He laid the barrel of the Winchester across the saddle to steady his aim.
When I kill him, I'll take his horse.
He waited, his finger nervously tracing the contour of the trigger. Finally, he squeezed the trigger. The rider jerked straight up in the saddle as the bullet struck him in the shoulder.
Caleb!
He knows my name. How could he know my name?
He cranked another cartridge in the chamber and fired again. This time, his target reared backward in the saddle, then fell forward on the horse's neck. The horse slowed to a walk, came up to Caleb's horse, and stopped. The rider, Jim Welch, slid off on the ground.
Oh, hell. Oh, hell.
Caleb's hands trembled as he held the rifle and stared at the body.
It's not my fault. I didn't know who was coming after me. It's your fault for not letting me know it was you.
It occurred to him then that the people who laid the ambush were still out there in the darkness somewhere, and he didn't have time to lament Welch's poor decision. He hurriedly stripped Welch of his gun belt, then checked his pockets for any money before he climbed on Welch's horse. Holding the reins of his own horse, he continued south along the river. It would take him a couple of days to get home. Will had seen four riders, but could only account for three of the dead. The last body he found was not shot by him.
Must have been one of his partners. Hell of a way to go. He put two rounds in him.
The dead man's horse was nowhere to be found, and the cattle were already bunching up near the creek again.
Well, at least the herd had no casualties. That ought to please Clayton.
He'd told Clayton he'd see him in the morning, but with all the shots fired, Will thought it might be best to go back to the house and give Clayton the report, since Clayton had said he was going to spend the night on the front porch.
I'll take care of these bodies in the morning. Might even get some help with the grave digging.
He tied a rope around Welch's boots and dragged his body back closer to the creek and left it with the other two bodies.
I'm willing to bet these men made camp somewhere near the river. Probably left some pack horses, too. Might be worth a try to go after the man that got away.
He turned to Buster.
But right now, we'll go take the word to Clayton. I might even take the saddle off you tonight.
After taking one last look to make sure the cattle had calmed down, he started back toward the house. When he got to the edge of the porch, Will saw Clayton sitting in a rocking chair, his shotgun lying on the floor beside it, and Clay and Stan asleep on a blanket on the floor. He stepped up onto the porch.
Clayton! Clayton!
Soft though it was, Will's voice was enough to light Clayton's fuse. He came out of his chair like a cannonball, grasping the air behind him for his shotgun on the floor, causing the chair to rock wildly.
Clayton, it's me, Will! Will Tanner!
Clayton regained his senses.
Will, damn, you gave me a start. I must have fell half asleep there for a minute. I heard the shooting, but then it got quiet for a long time, so I wasn't sure who shot who. Wasn't sure who might come up to the house.
Well, I wanted to let you know that everything's all right, and you didn't lose a cow that I could see.
You were able to scare them off, then?
No, they decided to fight it out. There were four of them. Three of them are dead, and one of them got away. I'm gonna go in the morning and see if I can track him. It's too dark to track him tonight.
He gestured toward the two sleeping boys.
I think you and the boys can finish out the night in your beds.
I swear, I reckon you knew what you were talking about when you said you could handle it by yourself. You killed three of them?
No, I didn't shoot but two of them, because they fired at me. The other one was shot by one of his own gang, the one that got away. It ain't so unusual that he shot one of his partners. When you think about how dark it is down there, with the cattle stampeding and everybody shooting, that's why I didn't want you and Clay out there. It might have been me that shot one of you. Then Louise wouldn't bake me no biscuits.
Well, I reckon I need to say I'm sorry for what I said in the Hatfields. I believe I was dead wrong. You are the same as sending a whole troop of deputy marshals.
I don't know about that. Sometimes you just get plumb lucky.
Will turned as he heard the front door open, and Louise joined them.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I didn't mean to wake you up.
Are you serious? Do you think I could possibly go to sleep with all that's happening? Guns going off in the middle of the night. My husband and sons out on the front porch. I'll be lucky if I ever get my eyelids to close again.
She closed her robe up tightly under her chin against the cool night air.
Did I hear you say some men were killed?
Her husband repeated Will's accounting of the incident.
You've had quite a night of it, haven't you? Maybe I'd best go ahead and start some breakfast.
Well, not on my account. I reckon that's up to you and Clayton. I'll catch a couple hours sleep before first light. Then I'll need to borrow a shovel. I've got graves to dig, and you might want to tell me where you'd rather have them.
I reckon I can at least take care of the burying for you. I know you want to see if you can pick up that other fella's trail as soon as it gets light enough to see.
I appreciate that, Clayton. It'll save me a lot of time in the morning.
I'll make up that bed for you in the spare room so you can get some sleep.
Ah, no, ma'am. I'll be sleeping in the barn with my horse. Buster sometimes gets a little melancholy when I leave him in a strange place, and I want him to be in good spirits in the morning.
I guess you know best.
She took a look at her two sleeping sons.
I think I'll leave those two right where they are. Clayton, you coming to bed?
Yes, dear.
She turned to leave, then called back over her shoulder.
I'll be fixing an early breakfast, Will, so you don't need to ride off hungry.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
The next morning, with horses and rider fed and rested, Will was anxious to see if this outlaw he was trying to track would indeed lead him back to the Hawkins Ranch. As he rode into Wichita Falls, he felt the instinct to check the saloon first while chasing the outlaw. But as he rode by the establishment owned by Howard Blaylock, He saw that there were no horses tied to the rail out front. He noticed the blacksmith, whose shop was next to the stable, and a familiar face working at the anvil.
Clive Smith.
I declare. The Oklahoma deputy, right?
He laid his hammer aside.
How you doing, Clive?
Good. Word was you went out to Fanny Hawkins' ranch and snatched Ward Hawkins right from under their noses. There any truth to that?
I reckon, more or less. I arrested him and took him back to Fort Smith.
Mister, that took some doing. There's talk that Lemuel and Arley ain't around no more either. You have anything to do with that?
Will shook his head. It was a lie, but he saw nothing good to come of building a name for himself as an executioner.
They say the only one of them boys left is Caleb. He's the only one of them I've seen in town lately. Matter of fact, I saw him ride past my forge about an hour ago leading three horses.
Caleb, huh?
Will remembered that it was Caleb who put a bullet through his shoulder the previous Christmas when the three brothers attempted to free their eldest brother, Ward. Only Caleb managed to get away alive.
He didn't stop anywhere?
Nope, just rode out the other end of town. He's heading home, I reckon.
Probably so. Well, I'd best get along. I'm getting behind in my work.
He pulled Buster's head around toward the south end of the street and left Clive to wonder.
Well, I'm already damn near there. I might as well ride on out to the Hawkins Ranch and snoop around Bobcat Creek a little bit. If I get lucky and Caleb wanders away from the house, I'll ask him real politely to ride back to Fort Smith with me.
Marty said you wanted to see me?
Robert Baines walked up to the rocking chair on the front porch where Fanny Hawkins was seated. A slow-witted man of middle age, Robert did most of the chores around the ranch, since all of Fanny's sons were dead but Caleb. He'd been recommended to Fanny by Maudie, Fanny's cook and housekeeper. Robert was her brother and needed a permanent job.
The latch on the outhouse door needs fixing.
I'll take care of it right away.
He hurried away to take a look at it. She smiled to herself over his quick response. No questions, just go do the job.
Why can't most men be like that? Too bad he don't know one end of the rifle from the other.
She was content at least to know that Caleb and the boys should be driving in a good little herd of cattle to add to those presently grazing on her ranch. She paused in her thoughts when she caught sight of a rider on the Bobcat Creek Trail coming from the direction of town. He was leading three horses. She squinted her eyes in an effort to identify him.
Bit early for Jack Coffee to show up. I only sent him a letter a couple of weeks ago, and he'd be riding all the way from Texarkana.
As the rider approached the front gate, she recognized him.
What the hell? Caleb ain't got no business being back here so soon, especially not by himself.
She noticed one of the horses he led carrying an empty saddle.
What the hell?
The last time he returned from an important job, it was to report the deaths of two of his brothers. She got up from her chair and walked to the edge of the porch to await his explanation as he arrived.
Don't come dragging your sorry ass home and tell me you ain't brought no cattle back with you.
We run into a real bad piece of luck.
I told you not to come home telling me nothing about no bad luck. Where's the other boys? They'd best be with my cows.
Wasn't nothing we could do about it, Fanny. Just pure bad luck. They was waiting for us. A whole posse of riders. Like they knew we was coming. Ringo scouted the place and said the cows was just waiting for us to come get them. Said there wasn't nobody watching them.
You just said there was a posse waiting for you. How come he didn't see none of them?
That's what I was wondering. I figured they didn't get there until after dark, or he'd have seen them. Like I said, we didn't have a chance. They was waiting on both sides of that herd. We put up a hell of a fight, but there was just too many of them. Till there was just me and Welch left fighting them. And then Welch went down, so I could see there weren't no use in me getting killed too. So I fought my way out of that valley, just so I could tell you what happened. Just low down bad luck.
Bad luck, huh?
She glared at him.
You ain't nothing but bad luck. Yellow to the bone. I wish to hell I'd stuck a knife in my belly when I was carrying you. I'd have stuck a knife in your paw, too, if I'd known his seed weren't no better than that.
It was just like I told you, Fanny. There was just too many of them for us to whip. I hated to have to come tell you, but I thought you needed to know.
She looked at him for a long moment, thoroughly disgusted. She would have been proud of him if he had killed two, but she had the picture in her mind of him running for his life.
Well, go on in the kitchen and get something to eat. Then get all your stuff out of the house and move it into the bunkhouse. You'll be staying out there. I don't allow no cowards in the house.
She turned her back and walked to the front door, slamming it as she stepped inside.
Marty!
Fanny walked into the parlor, the solemn cook already in the hall waiting for her.
Yes'm?
Caleb's back. He'll most likely be looking for something to eat. After that, he's gonna be moving his stuff out of the house. He'll be sleeping in the bunkhouse with Robert.
Yes'm. Will he be eating in the dining room with you?
No. He'll be eating in the kitchen with you and Robert and any other hands I hire.
The other three men, are they coming back to the house tonight or are they staying with the cattle?
They ain't coming back. And there ain't no cattle. All three of them men are dead and Caleb came home with his tail between his legs. So, there won't be nobody to fix breakfast for but me, you, Robert, and Caleb.
Yes'm. Right away, ma'am.
In the fading light at day's end, Will lay on the bank of Bobcat Creek, about 100 yards away, scanning the Hawkins house and barn with his field glasses. He had hoped to overtake Caleb Hawkins before he reached the ranch. Perhaps if he had not taken so much time deciding whether to arrest him or not, he might have caught him. Then he wouldn't have left himself with the delicate problem he was now faced with. He had kidnapped Fanny's oldest son right out from under her nose, but that was because he was bunking in the bunkhouse. He was not confident in his odds of going into the ranch house and arresting Caleb. He would have to catch him outside the house somewhere.
Might as well give it up for tonight. Maybe I'll catch him alone tomorrow, riding out to check on the cattle or something.
Just then, the kitchen door opened and a man came outside. His arms were filled with what appeared to be clothing or bed sheets. Will's eyes followed him across the yard.
That's him. That's Caleb Hawkins.
He was going to the bunkhouse. It occurred to him that Caleb might be taking his belongings out of the house to move into the bunkhouse.
Nah, that would be too much of a coincidence. Lightning never strikes in the same place twice. What are the odds?
He was not prepared for such an opportunity to present itself. It was getting late. He had no camp made. He had not taken care of his horses, and he didn't have a horse for a prisoner to ride.
Unless I put him on my pack horse.
Another thought occurred to him then.
This place is deserted. There's no one to chase me. It's too good an opportunity to pass up. I might be a deputy marshal for 20 more years and never get another shot like this.
He looked around him on the creek bank.
This'll have to do for our temporary camp, but you're gonna have to wear that saddle a little longer tonight, Buster.
He climbed aboard Buster and headed the big buckskin across the dark prairie toward the back of the bunkhouse. When he reached the bunkhouse, he climbed down and went to the window at the end of it. He carefully wiped the dirt away until he cleared a hole big enough to peek through. Inside, he could see the older man already on his bed, while Caleb was headed for the door at the other end of the bunkhouse.
Oh, hell. He's headed back to the house.
Will couldn't afford to let him get to the house, so he ran to the other end of the bunkhouse just as Caleb came out. Will drew his six gun as he reached the door.
In for a dime, in for a dollar.
Caleb saw the gun barrel inches from his face.
I don't want to hear another sound out of you. If I do, it'll be the last sound you ever make. I'll have no choice but to shoot. You understand that?
Caleb nodded vigorously, frightened out of his wits.
I'm arresting you for cattle rustling. If you do as I tell you and come peacefully, I'll take you to jail and a fair trial. If you don't, I'll shoot you. Do you understand?
With eyes as big as saucers, Caleb shook his head rapidly again, helpless to do otherwise. He knew that the gunman was Will Tanner, and he was convinced he would do as he threatened.
Now, we're gonna walk to the barn.
Will turned him in that direction and gave him a little tap behind his head with the gun barrel to get him started. He went straight to the barn, with Will following behind him and Buster trotting along behind Will.
Pick any horse you want and put your saddle on him. And remember, I'll be right behind you watching every move you make. The first wrong move you make, I'll blow your brains out.
Robert Baines had heard his sister ringing out the signal that breakfast was ready, so he walked into the kitchen to eat.
Good morning. Caleb's not with you? Is he coming to breakfast?
Blamed if I know. I thought Caleb would be sleeping in the house just like he always did before his brothers all got killed.
Kind of surprised me, too. Miss Fanny is pretty strict in her ways, but she might let Caleb move back in the house again.
She glanced toward the back door.
Where is he, anyway?
Oh, I don't know. He said he was going to the outhouse last night. He never came back before I went to sleep. And when I woke up this morning, he weren't there. I figured he might have snuck back in the house last night. You sure he ain't in here asleep?
I walked down the hall past the boys' bedroom on my way to the kitchen. The door was open. There weren't nobody in there. Reckon where he is?
Beats the hell out of me. Let me eat some breakfast and get out of here before you tell her. Maybe he'll be back in the bunkhouse directly.
I gotta take her breakfast into her in 15 minutes, and I'll have to tell her Caleb didn't come to eat. She'll be fit to be tied. She don't want nobody to make any decisions but her, and she never told Caleb he could go anywhere.
Maudie was accurate in her opinion that Fanny would be furious to find that Caleb had disappeared. She'd been standing at the doorway for the last few minutes and had overheard their entire conversation.
Well, Tanner, where the hell is Jack Coffey?
It was close to dinner time when Clay Hill called out from the loft of the barn.
Hey, Papa, look who's coming yonder. It's Will Tanner, and he's got somebody with him.
Clayton walked out in the yard to meet Will. He saw the man on the horse Will was leading was handcuffed.
That the other one? The one that shot one of his partners?
Caleb cringed. He didn't know they knew it was him who shot Welch. Will had said nothing about it. He had gotten nervous as soon as he realized Will was taking him back to the ranch they had attempted to rustle. Seeing Clayton Hill's face caused him to wonder if Will had brought him back here with the intention of hanging him.
This is Caleb Hawkins. He was the fourth man on that party of rustlers. I'm taking him to Fort Smith to trial, but I wanted to let you and your neighbors know that Fanny Hawkins hasn't got anybody to steal for her anymore. My boss, Marshal Dan Stone, will be talking with his counterpart in Texas to investigate the Hawkins Ranch and take over that responsibility.
Well, that's good news, I swear. It's about time somebody gave us some help. Next time, we'll just send for you. Wait till I tell Dillard and the Wiggins brothers. Matter of fact, Jordan Hatfield'd like to know about it, too. You know, it'd be a mighty good thing if we could have us another little meeting at Hatfield's store and tell everybody at the same time. We could have it tonight. My boy Clay can jump on his horse and go tell the others to come to Hatfield's tonight after supper. What do you say, Will? Shouldn't set you back more than half a day.
Will hesitated.
In the meantime, I could tell Louise to throw some extra taters in the pan for dinner.
He took a long look at Caleb.
We'll throw some in for your prisoner, too.
You'd best check that with your wife. We ain't giving her much notice.
Stanley, go tell your mother she's gonna have company for dinner.
The 12-year-old turned at once and ran to the house. Clayton looked at Clay Jr. then.
What are you waiting for, boy? Go get your horse.
Clay Jr. ran off toward the barn.
I'll need a place to park my prisoner.
I figured that would make your decision for you. We can put Mr. Hawkins in the corn crib. I'll put a padlock on the door. That'll suit him for a little while.
Will untied Caleb's feet and helped him down off the roan, then took him to the crib. He opened the door.
Here, give me your hands.
Caleb held them up, and Will unlocked the cuff on one of Caleb's hands.
Now crawl up on that corn.
The corn in the crib was only about knee high, so Caleb crawled up on his hands and knees.
I'll bring you something to eat soon as it's ready.
Will closed the door and put the lock in the hasp.
I was wondering how you captured that man. You must have caught him before he got back to Fanny Hawkins Ranch.
Almost.
What do you mean, almost? You mean he was just about there?
He made it home before I could catch him. I had to arrest him after he got there. The ranch looked almost deserted. They lost their cow thieves right here at your place, so there wasn't anybody there to help them. I surprised him and he didn't put up a fight. I wish they were all that easy.
When Louise had signaled that dinner was ready, Will filled a plate and took it, along with a cup of coffee, out to the corn crib. Since the corn ears that Caleb was perched upon were not a level surface, Will handed him the plate of food first, so he could set it down while he arranged the ears like a shallow hole to put the cup in.
You doing all right?
Caleb answered with nothing more than the most forlorn look Will had ever seen.
I saw an old bucket outside the barn when I took the horses to water. I'll go get it for you in case you have to pee. We're going to be here for a while yet, so I doubt you can hold it that long. And I don't want you to go on the corn.
I'd appreciate it.
Will nodded, turned around, and headed for the barn. He was back in a few minutes with the bucket, banging on the sides of it to shake out what looked like dirt caked in the bottom of it. He inspected it again and decided there were no holes in it, so he opened the door and passed it in to Caleb.
Thank you. Are you really going to take me to Fort Smith to stand trial?
That's my intention. Why are you asking?
Why are you taking me to that meeting tonight with those other ranchers? Why don't we start out for Fort Smith?
Well, we are killing a whole lot of time waiting around for that meeting. But it's what we in the Marshal Service call a courtesy. The owners of these farms you and your brothers have been hitting on a regular schedule need to be assured that you ain't gonna hit them no more. And also, the Marshal Service needs to show them evidence that we responded when they asked for help. We'll be headed to Fort Smith first thing in the morning. You ain't got nothing to worry about. They just want to see an arrested rustler in the flesh. All right?
All right.
Over 100 miles east of Clayton Hill's farm and cattle ranch, 12 miles from the town of Atoka, a grim-looking man, tall and thin, with a dark mustache, stood gazing at the charred ruins of what had once been a trading post. He might have wished this was not the place he had come from Texas to find, but he knew damn well it was. Reese's letter had been highly detailed in the directions. He shifted his gaze to the small barn still standing when a man walked out the door and stood looking at him. So he led his horses over to talk to him. The man, an Indian, said nothing, watching the white man carefully as he approached.
What happened here?
He gestured back toward the charred remains of the saloon. He could see a woman and some children inside the little barn.
Place burned down?
No fooling. Where's the man who built it?
Gone. This is my house now.
Where did he go?
The Indian shrugged. The white man could see he wasn't going to get much help from the Choctaw man.
Which way to Atoka?
That trail.
The Indian pointed to a narrow trail leading away from the creek. It was a continuation of the trail that had led him to this point. It seemed to be heading in the right direction, so he nodded to the Indian and climbed back on his horse. Reese's map said Atoka was 12 miles in that direction, so he figured he'd make it there by supper time. Frank Traynor walked inside what was evidently his only choice for supper in the entire little town, a building with a sign over the door that read Lottie's Kitchen.
Welcome.
A smiling woman greeted him as he looked the place over. He nodded in return. He noticed the table near the door and the sign on it, unbuckled his gun belt, rolled it up, and placed it on the table. He got a smile of appreciation from Lottie then.
This is your first time visiting us, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, I hope we make it a pleasant experience for you. I'm Lottie. Lou Bell will be taking care of you. Sit wherever there's an empty chair.
She signaled Lou Bell then as he walked over to a small table against the wall and sat down, facing the front door.
Evening. My name's Louise, but you can call me Lou Bell. They call me that because my last name's Ballone. What do they call you?
Frank.
Well, glad to meet you, Frank. What would you like to drink?
He hesitated for a moment.
Is it Frank something or something Frank?
It's just Frank. I'll drink coffee.
Right, Frank. Coffee it is. I'll go get it while you're deciding if you're going to eat meatloaf or baked ham. You get your choice tonight.
She left to get his coffee, realizing that her usual charm wasn't going to thaw this customer. When she returned with his coffee, he told her he would try the baked ham, so she went back to the kitchen to get his plate.
Who's the sinister-looking customer that just came in?
Lottie sliced some ham for his plate.
All I know is his name is Frank. Then I think that's about all I'm gonna know about him. He ain't the chatty type.
Lou Bell took the plate and placed it on the table before Frank.
How's that look? Can I get you anything else to go with it?
Maybe you can answer a question for me. On the way to town tonight, I passed a burnt-down building. Do you know anything about the man that owned that and what happened to him?
About 12 miles from here on Clear Boggy Creek?
Frank nodded.
That was a man named Reese. He was selling whiskey to the Indians until Will Tanner closed him down.
Now what happened to Reese?
Will arrested him. He's still in jail here while he's waiting for a jail wagon to take him to Fort Smith, Arkansas.
In jail? I didn't see any jail when I rode in.
You have to know where to look for it to find it. It's an old smokehouse that the Choctaw policemen used to lock up drunks and rowdy Indians. We're fixing his meals for him. Jim Little Eagle is taking care of him while Will's out of town. Jim ought to be in here any time now to pick up Reese's supper.
His plate was emptied by the time Jim Little Eagle walked in the door and stood talking to Lottie while he waited for Lou Bell to bring Reese Trainer's supper to him. When Jim turned to leave, Frank got up from the table and headed for the front door. He handed Lottie the money for his supper and quickly strapped on his gun belt.
I hope your supper was satisfactory.
It was good.
Well, come back to see us, Mr. I forgot, we don't know your last name.
Trainer.
He went out the door, leaving Lottie to turn to look at Lou Bell, her hand pressed over her wide-open mouth. Outside, Frank saw Jim Little Eagle walking past Brandt's store. Frank untied his horses and led them as he followed the Choctaw policeman down toward the stables. But before reaching them, he turned in an alley. When Frank reached the alley, he saw the small square log building.
Good.
He saw Jim's horse tied at the corner of the building.
I'm going to need a horse.
He tied his two horses at the rail in front of the barber shop, which was on one side of the alley and appeared to be closed. Then he walked down the alley just as Jim unlocked the padlock on the door and drew his pistol when he lifted the padlock from the latch. Unaware of the man behind him with his .44 leveled at his back, Jim opened the door and stepped back to let Reese come out for his supper.
Drop it or you're dead.
Frank jammed the pistol against Jim's back. Startled, Jim had no choice but to obey. He dropped the revolver on the ground.
Pick it up, Reese.
Frank?
Reese seemed scarcely able to believe it was his brother, but recovered quickly and reached down to grab Jim Little Eagle's pistol and aim it at the Choctaw.
Nah, you damn savage.
Hold it, Reese, don't do it. We don't want the whole damn Indian Nation down on us.
He gave Jim a shove through the open door.
We'll just let him take your place for a while.
He closed the door and put the padlock back on the latch, but didn't lock it.
Besides, he ain't the one who put you in this rat hole. That's the one we're going to go after.
Maybe you're right. The engine didn't treat me bad while I was in here. But I wouldn't have been in here if he hadn't wired the damn marshal, and he sent Will Tanner over here to burn up everything I had. He wiped me out, Frank. I'm gonna kill him.
Yes, you are. And I'm gonna help you do it. Where's Will Tanner?
I don't know. From what I could figure out hearing him talking to that engine in there, he rode out past the Arbuckles somewhere to settle some cattle rustling problems. I'm lucky I was still here when you got here. He wired Fort Smith for a jail wagon to ship me to Fort Smith.
Well, we need to get out of here before somebody finds out it's the engine policeman shut up inside this damn smokehouse instead of you. I brought you a nice-looking horse and saddle to ride. That ain't no engine saddle either. That's a fine-looking rocking chair sitting on that gray gelding.
Yeah, that's the engine's horse. How the hell can he afford a horse and a saddle like that?
Probably what he picks up helping that deputy that put us out of business. What happened to all that whiskey I sent you?
That's what he used to start the fire that burned us out.
You mean he didn't carry that whiskey off to sell somewhere else? That would have set him up for a pretty good payday. Oh, I swear, there ain't nobody I got less respect for than a damn honest lawman.
He spat on the jailhouse door to punctuate his ire.
Now, we best get the hell out of here before somebody starts wondering where the engine policeman is.
Where are we going? They took everything I had. They took my gun belt, my rifle, all my cartridges. Even took my blanket. I need to get some stuff.
You ain't gotta worry. I took a big hit too, but I'm still pretty well fixed. I got two extra cartridge belts in them packs. That pistol you picked up looks like it's in good shape. And there's a rifle in that saddle sling. You'll be just fine.
Where are we going? I want to know where to find Will Tanner.
You ain't got to worry about that. When he gets back here and finds out you're gone, and you left this injured friend of his in the smokehouse, he'll find you. So here's what we need to do. Before I left Waco, I got a letter from Brady Thompson. He asked me if you and I wanted to go in with him on a saloon and whorehouse in Injun territory. He said he'd already got halfway set up on Blue River near Tishomingo. The building's already there. We can go to Tishomingo and see what old Brady's got going for himself over there. What do you think? Maybe we might want to go into business with him. We get a few drunk Injuns raising hell over that way, and we're liable to have the Injun police crying to Fort Smith about it. That's in Chickasaw Nation, so it won't be the same Injun that lives here. He won't know us, but chances are the deputy they send will be Will Tanner.
Sounds good to me. Let's get moving out of this damn town.
He stepped up into Jim Little Eagle's saddle and pulled the gray gelding up close to the smokehouse door.
Hey, Little Eagle, behave yourself in there and maybe they'll bring you some breakfast in the morning.
Will, Caleb, and Clayton Hill were the last to arrive at Jordan Hatfield's store. The others were eager to get a look at one of the rustlers who had caused their grief.
You said you needed a secure place to hold your prisoner while we had our meeting. You can put him in my storeroom, and I'll lock the door. There ain't no windows or no way to get out. You can even keep him there all night if you want to, and you can make your camp here tonight. Then Dawn can fix you up with a good breakfast to start you out right in the morning.
Thanks just the same, but I think it'll be better if I camp down the river. We won't be at this meeting long, and I can make camp and be started early in the morning. That'll be better anyway. And the rest of you can carry on as late as you like, and we'll be out of the way.
Dillard and Kemp looked kind of disappointed.
You've all had a chance to see one of the rustlers, and I expect you got a good look at the other three before they were buried.
He could tell by their reaction that they had. He figured Clayton must have waited a while before burying them, knowing that all of the ranchers wanted to see the dead rustlers.
So, now you've seen the last one. That's what you wanted, wasn't it?
Will heard a few grumbles, and he couldn't imagine what their problem was, but he thought they'd seen all they needed to see, so he had Hatfield lock Caleb in the storeroom and hand him the key.
What else have we got to talk about?
Henry Kemp looked around.
I figured we was gonna hang him, and that's what we was really meeting about.
John Dillard spoke up.
I thought the same thing. So we could send a message to any future Texas cattle rustlers who think we're easy pickings. Let them know what happens to rustlers in Oklahoma territory.
Will held up his hand and asked for their attention.
Before this goes any further, I need to tell you there ain't gonna be no hanging. I'll be taking my prisoner back for trial, just like I was assigned to do by U.S. Marshal Daniel Stone. There ain't no doubt he'll be found guilty, but if his punishment is hanging or a prison sentence, we'll leave that up to the judge.
His position was disappointing to them, but no one dared challenge him. Hatfield was the first to back him up.
Will's right. If we're ever going to have calm out here in this part of the territory, it's going to be up to men like us to obey the laws of the land.
His statement was met with shrugs of indifference and still some signs of disappointment, but no real objections.
Now, the reason I came to this meeting was, first, to let you see that the fourth rustler did not get away, and he is in custody. And second, I thought you'd want to know what the possibility was for more attempts by Fanny Hawkins to raid your cattle.
He went on then to paint them a picture of the large cattle ranch with no one to take care of what cattle they already had, and certainly no one to raid other ranches.
The whole place looked deserted. I was able to slip in and confront Caleb Hawkins without anyone at the house even knowing I was there. There ain't no guarantee that you ain't ever gonna get hit by cattle rustlers, but I don't think you'll have to worry about Fanny Hawkins for quite a while. And my boss is gonna go to his counterpart in Texas to ask for some action on his part to put a stop to Fanny Hawkins and the like. I hope none of you have any more trouble like this, and I want to thank you for your help and your hospitality. I want to be sure my prisoner and I get some sleep tonight. We've got a long ride ahead of us.
After he was all done with handshaking and well-wishing, Will went to the storeroom to tell Caleb it was time to go. Hatfield and the other men followed Will to the door, but stood back out of the way as he unlocked the door and opened it. Will prepared himself for any surprise attempts at attack upon opening the door. When Caleb didn't come out, Will went in. He stepped inside to find Caleb's body hanging on a rope tied to a rafter overhead. After a minute or so with no sound from inside the room, Hatfield's curiosity overcame his caution and he stepped inside behind Will.
I swear.
I didn't think of that possibility. I didn't see any rope.
It was in a cabinet, right there in that corner.
The other men filed in the room to look at the corpse.
Well, looks like we had us a hanging anyway.
Will couldn't help feeling compassion for a young man so filled with fear that he'd take his own life to prevent someone else from doing it. Hatfield helped Will get Caleb down from the rafter. While Will put his arms around Caleb's legs in position to catch him on his shoulder, Hatfield stood up on the overturned keg that Caleb had used and untied the knot. Will laid the body on the floor and turned to the group of men.
I reckon I'll be going now. Maybe I'll see you fellows again if I'm out this way again.